we look at a couple of different metrics, and the cap rate is really second or third. We're looking at the internal rate of return. We're looking at the cash on cash returns. We look at return on cost. We look at the 3-year average, the 7-year average. We look at an unleveraged return, a leveraged return.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools and make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me is Stash Galasinski. Stash, I butchered your name again, I'm sure, but how do you say your last name?
Galasinski.
All right, awesome. So Stash, you are with Capstone Partners, have been there for several years. How many years exactly have you been with Capstone?
So we've been with my team, and I have been with Capstone Apartment Partners. It'll be 2 years this coming August, though we've been working with them for a little bit longer than that.
Great. And you've been in the commercial brokerage. You specialize in multifamily in Cincinnati is your home base. I know you guys do business in Columbus and Dayton and some in Lexington and probably a few other markets, tertiary markets around. I wanted to bring you on to talk about quite a few things, to talk a little bit about your business and the successes you've had, as well as talk about what you're seeing in the market. And then lastly on, you know, a lot of people have questions on how to work with brokers and how to work with brokers that are doing business. And it's easy to hook up with a residential real estate agent and get them to commit to you, but it's a lot harder to hook up with a commercial broker and get them to commit with you and take you serious. So I wanted to talk about that as well. So first off, I'd like to welcome you and appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit more kind of about you, about your background and about what you and your team are doing right now?
Sure. So I guess we'll start with the firm. The firm is Capstone Apartment Partners. We have offices in Tampa, Orlando, Nashville, Charlotte, and Cincinnati. Charlotte's our headquarters, and that's where the firm was started about 10 years ago and has grown to, I think we have maybe 25 or 30 brokers. And we function in the private capital, structured private equity, semi-institutional space. So, you know, the deals that we're looking at are, you know, 50 to 100 units up to several hundred units, if not 1,000 units in a chunk, be that in a single asset or across a portfolio. Myself, I've been here in the Cincinnati market for about 8 years. I came here for a deal that I was working on, and it's a great city. I like it a lot. It's treated me well, and I built a brokerage practice in tandem with my partners here, Nathan Murphy and Sharif Gouda. The three of us function as a team, and together our office covers Ohio and Indiana, and then we kind of split up Kentucky between us and our Nashville office. And then our focus is specifically, our office is mostly geared towards Cincinnati, Dayton, and Columbus. So we do have traction in Northeast Ohio and in Indiana as well. And the deals that we're looking at are, you know, traditionally we're not prospecting on anything less than, you know, 100 units. Sometimes we'll dip down into the 50s. And, you know, we're actively prospecting on the market. We're out there all the time. If I'm not on the phone with you, I'm on the phone with somebody else. You know, my job as a broker is to be on the phone. If I'm not on the phone, I'm not doing my job. So it's kind of the gist of it.
Cool. Let's talk quickly about, you know, how do you find, you know, you don't have to go into extreme detail, but how do you find owners that are interested in selling and try to connect them with buyers?
So real estate, as you likely know, is a relationship business. And so, you know, you find owners or owners find you or opportunities come because you have established a reputation for yourself. And, you know, somebody's got, you know, the reasons people sell are death, divorce, partnership disillusions, or it's just time to exit the investment. You've hit your return hurdles, and you know, your mission in the company is to, you know, generate for your investors a certain return, and well, here it is. So let's sell. Our job as brokers is to go out there and be talking to the principals of the ownership groups that own the assets in the markets that we track, and to provide value to them so that when they decide, hey, it's time to sell this asset, for whatever reason, that we are the ones top of mind. And it may be us and another group, or, you know, we find ourselves competing just the same way that buyers compete for deals as well.
What are three key things that you guys do to be prospecting?
You know, you want to make sure that you're doing your best to add value on every call, and it doesn't always happen that way. But you know, if you're calling, an easy call is, hey, I've got this listing. Is it something you're interested in? Even if you know it's not something they are, because at least it opens the door, and it's not, hey, do you want to sell? I've done that. I'm guilty of that, certainly, but you really don't get a lot of traction with that. And you're really just, that becomes a numbers game. If you're just, hey, do you want to sell? Hey, do you want to sell? You've got to make like 100 calls a day to find that one that, yeah, sure, I'll consider it. So you want to be adding value. You want to be knowledgeable, of the market, of their properties, and kind of what's happening in the capital markets, because essentially investment real estate is an offshoot of the greater capital markets. If you think about it, I mean, even a 20 unit is considered part of the capital markets, even if it's only 20 units, for instance.
Sure.
I think that was three.
Let's shift a little bit, because I think a lot of listeners will be interested in how do they build a relationship with a broker like you, or really in any market when you're trying to get in. One of the hardest things to do is to find properties, especially right now. Anybody who's buying is trying to find a property. They're trying to find something to buy, and there's limited amount of properties that are going, and they're all going for higher prices. So how do we build a relationship with a successful broker that is going to actually take us serious?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, I mean, we get calls every day, somebody wanting to get into the market. And breakfast yesterday with an investor group. You know, like I said, it's a relationship. Just as it's a relationship for us trying to build with the sellers, we're also wanting to build relationships with buyers, but we want credible buyers who we know we can rely on to do what they say, and aren't going to make us look stupid, right? Because sometimes you only get one shot at a deal, and if you select the wrong horse, well, you know, you may spend X amount of time on it and it doesn't come to fruition, and everybody ends up frustrated because the buyer that you picked can't or won't do what they said they would do. So how do you build the relationship with a broker? Well, you know, as a good broker is going to spend the majority of their time on building relationships with sellers. The reason that they're going to do that is because you can't make any money just trying to hustle off market deals and work with every buyer that comes to you, because I feel like there are some people out there, whether they do it intentionally or not, but it feels like they're professional time wasters. It's like, really? Like, how do you function? And so it's, you know, making sure that if you step up to the plate, if you pick up the phone and make the call, make sure you're able to do what you say you can, or you know, a quick no is better than a long maybe, right? So if you have your criteria, be upfront about that and say, you know, here's what I'm looking for. But then also be receptive to what we're telling you, because if your criteria are you want 11 caps on Class A deals, I'll say, thanks so much. It's been great speaking with you. I wish you the best. Because those don't exist. It's like, and if they did, why would you be my first call? You know, that's sometimes a question, and it maybe comes off a little blunt, but it's like, well, why should I call you? Why should you be my first call? Because, you know, there are other groups who I know are credible. So what distinguishes you? Maybe that's something.
Well, I think you make a really good point with when you talk about how you might only have one crack at a deal. So you've got a seller who, yeah, they're interested in selling, but if you bring them the wrong buyer and that deal doesn't go through, or they make you look like an idiot, you're never going to get a chance with them again. You don't even get to sell that deal potentially. And so you want to make sure that you're bringing respectable buyers to that deal, and buyers that can actually get the job done. So they have to prove to you that they're that type of buyer.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about consistency? If a buyer's consistently talking to you, does that help, or is that more annoying at times? Or do you get that buyer where it's like, okay, you back off a little bit, you're kind of obnoxious? Maybe that's
I've had to have that conversation. Like, hey, listen, I think you're a great person, but you don't need to call me, you know, once a week. I'll call you when I have something.
Yeah.
You know, because again, it's I'm out there front facing, trying to go out and find you the deals. And if you and I are on the phone for, you know, 45 minutes talking about whatever it is, it's like, that's not a very good use of 45 minutes.
Yep.
So.
Do you have any idea in, just pick either Cincinnati, Columbus, whatever, how many 100 plus unit multifamily deals are selling in a year about?
Well, I know that Columbus has at least double the quantity of transactions that Cincinnati does. Mm-hmm. Part of that is due to, I think really our geography and our topography here in town. It's hillier here.
Yeah.
It's harder to build larger complexes.
Right.
But if you look at Columbus or Dayton or Indianapolis, they tend to be flatter cities, so it's easier to build. And you just, you know, plow out a field and there you go. Whereas here you have to do geotechnical surveys and engineering and pilings and all that sort of good stuff. So I probably should be able to quote you that figure, but I don't have that right off the top of my head.
No, that's okay.
It's not very many. It's maybe 10, maybe 15 in Cincinnati. So you're probably looking at 30 to 40 on the very high end in Columbus. Or Indianapolis, I think, had 70 transactions last year, maybe okay. The year before.
Okay. Well, I guess the point of the question was that, you know, we're talking about somebody calling you every week, and a lot of books will tell you, hey, call these brokers, be on top of them, which is, you know, true to an extent. You also don't want to be annoying to them either. But when you're talking, your main job is to work with the seller. So if somebody's continually just contacting you, we only have, you know, 15, 20 properties that are selling in a year. It's not like you have a deal every day that you're trying to sell.
Right.
It's a deal, right. You know, it's a deal a month type of thing, or maybe mm-hmm. a couple. So,
but at the same time, you do want to be in the same way that we're trying to create top of mind status in our seller clients. You know, it's also good for a buyer to, you know, just check in either via phone or email, and just say, hey, just calling to check in, you know, what are you working on? Is there anything that we might be able to work on together?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you know, not right now. I mean, you and I have had those conversations where it's like, well, this is what I have going and, you know, nothing really fits, but it's like, okay, nice talking to you. I'll talk to you in a week or 2 weeks or next month.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And there's those buyers too, that are from, let's just say California, cause I think that's maybe one of the more common states, that call you up and they expect to get a deal over the phone. What would you say to those buyers? Are you going to take somebody serious over the phone, or you got to meet them in person?
So if they're bidding on a deal, especially a listing, if they haven't seen it, we're not going to give it to them.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like, well, we're not going to come in and see it until, we have it tied up. And it's like, well, you know, there are 5-10 people behind you that have seen it, are at a competitive price, and you know, thanks for playing, we'll see you on the next one.
Yeah.
Like we just had a deal, we had a couple of deals that we marketed, and we had 20 offers, and wow, the highest offer was from a California group, and they're high by far. But you know, our advice to the seller was, they haven't seen it. They don't own anything in the market. I, I couldn't in good faith say, yeah, pick this buyer. Because I didn't have confidence that they'd be able to follow through with the transaction.
Well, and that's right, because they're putting a really high offer. So if it's that much higher than everybody else, you got to wonder, well, are they just trying to get the deal tied up and then they're going to retrade it? They're going to come.
Yeah, it's like, you know that a retrade is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to do their research and go, oh, I guess it's only worth this price. We'll buy it.
Or it's like, if you're from California and you're coming in and you're bidding on a C-class asset in the Midwest, that's what these were. You're going to get on site and you're going to be like, no. And you know, it's going to take you a week, maybe 2 weeks to get out here. It's just a waste of time. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I think if you're serious about, and we have a lunch today with an investor group, if you're serious about making entry into a market that either, it doesn't matter if you live in it or not. I think being out there and making the effort to say hello is very important. I mean, we do that as brokers. We're on the road. I'm headed to Colorado in a couple of weeks to do a proposal, and we're going to have some meetings while we're out there, because, you know, people like to do business with people that they know and that they can trust and that they've met in person. So, you know, if they're not going to be in your market, you got to go to them.
Right. Right. Well, good points. Let's shift a little bit about into the market and kind of what you're seeing, how you're underwriting some of these deals. Cause obviously I think anybody knows that's, has a pulse on the market, that cap rates are compressed and prices are high. So how do you look at deals? You're trying to do your best representing the sellers, but you're also trying to be, you know, honest and represent the buyers as well to, you know, so talk to us a bit about the
market. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to ever have a client buy a property and then, you know, come back and say, well, you sold me this bill of goods. It's like, no, you know, we want to make sure that you get a fair deal. And, yeah, you know, we're trying to work for that on every transaction. Doesn't always happen, because sometimes the buyers don't take the advice that we've offered. but to your question of how are we underwriting things and why are cap rates compressed? So cap rates are a relative measure. And going back to the earlier comment of capital markets, and that's what we're functioning in, you know, the value of the property that we're looking at is determined by we look at a couple of different metrics, and the cap rate is really second or third. We're looking at the internal rate of return. We're looking at the cash on cash returns. We look at return on cost. We look at the 3-year average, the 7-year average. We look at an unleveraged return, a leveraged return. We have all these different, you know, we have all these different data points that we're taking into account when we're pricing a deal. Sometimes, I guess generally what we're shooting for, if it's stabilized and there's not a value add component, we're looking for generally like 8% cash on cash in year one. To get that on an amortized loan, I think you're probably at like, we're looking for an 8-10% cash on cash return in year one. And we're trying to be as real as possible on our income and our expenses. We try not to be much more than 5, you know, 10% if we really have to stretch it, if there's a good reason, above the seller's income. Then on expenses, oftentimes in our pro forma, and I think Todd, you could probably attest to this, is we're above, the seller's expenses in our pro forma. So we try and be real about how it's going to operate. And so that all trickles down. Then we have the, so you have the NOI before reserves, and then you have the NOI after reserves. That's the number that we're keying on for our cash on cash returns. And then we factor appropriate, you know, again, if it's stabilized, we're looking for at least a 1.25 debt coverage ratio. And, you know, when we're pricing a deal, we're going to try and max it out, right? Like, we're going to go to the seller and say, well, here's our range. You know, we've taken into account, maybe you've got a higher loss to lease because you prefer to just keep it full than maximize the rent. So we've kind of, we've compressed that loss to lease, but we've also increased your vacancy factor a little bit. Maybe we've identified that you're not implementing, or you don't have a utility reimbursement program, and we're theorizing that you could phase that in over 3 years. So that's why we're, you know, 6% above your income. And then, you know, we'll look at, there's a lot of, especially on smaller deals, there's miscategorization or misplacement of expenses and category. Like, you know, you'll see like repairs and maintenance numbers that are, well, they include the maintenance and salary in there. It's like, okay, well, that should be in salaries and payroll. So we'll just recategorize it and try and make that all line up appropriately.
How do you break it to the seller when they're, and how do they take it when they're, you know, think they're running a property efficiently, and but you go, well, geez, you know, you're self-managing this thing, you're doing this, some of these repairs on your own or whatever. This is really where it should be at. What do sellers think when you do that? Because I'm sure that happens, especially on the smaller properties when you're talking like a 50 or under unit.
You know, you say, well, we had this instance a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, where we had this group and they were self-managing, and they're looking around the country and they're like, you know, we see assets that are similar to this that are selling for 40 to 50 a door. So that's what we think our properties are worth. So I went through them. I walked all three of them. And then we did our financial analysis, and it's like, guys, these aren't, they're not worth on the level that you think that they are. And here's where we think they're worth. And, you know, here's how we came to those conclusions. And so it's, you know, it's not like you're an idiot, you're doing a terrible job. It's, you know, this is what our income and expense looks like. And, you know, if you want to hit those numbers, and we did that, we said, if you want to hit those numbers, this is what your rents have to be at. And it was like $200 to $300 above where they currently were. And it's like, you're not actually going to hit those numbers in those neighborhoods, but thanks for playing. We'll be in touch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that, because, and I would say that's reflective of, you know, what you bring, that I see is that, you know, I mean, sometimes we can disagree a little bit on numbers, or I might be, you know, underwriting a little differently, but your numbers come, when we look at brokers in general, your numbers are fairly accurate.
And right.
You guys do a good job at trying to portray where the market's at. And I would, yeah, I can see that you're just not taking listings just to take a listing, because I do see some brokers that it just feels like, did you just take this listing? Did you just didn't want to say no or what? Because some of these numbers are just pie in the sky. I just can't get them. But for most, you guys are, you know, your underwriting's good, and it looks like you guys talk to your sellers about realistic terms. So that's nice. Where do you see this market going right now? And, you know, are you seeing weakening in the market, or is it, you know, kind of where are we at?
That's the billion-dollar question, really. And for, you know, years, there's been talk or questions of you know, where we're at in the market. And, you know, right now we're 10 years into the, we're at the 10-year mark of the 2008 downturn. But, you know, and I hear people saying that, oh, this is reminiscent of then. And that was just when I had started my, my career. So I can't really speak to now versus then, but, you know, I think that the Fed is, you know, they are slowly raising interest rates, but I don't think, I think also, so I don't think that that's going to have a tremendous negative impact on prices and values, because I think we're going to see a lot more value add and real value add stories coming out because of the recent change in the tax law, where you're able to capitalize all of your improvements in the year that they were done, as I believe it's written, instead of over their lifetime. So I think that the purpose of that is to, you know, somebody made the analogy one time that we have all these old, you know, Buicks and Chevys in the market. Those are those properties built in the, you know, 60s, 70s, maybe even into the 80s now. You know, the 80s products are 30, almost 40 years old. So I think that the result of that is going to have a lot more capital influx into these existing assets that probably have needed it. You know, they've been held together with duct tape and bubblegum for a long time. And, you know, they need new HVAC units. They need, you know, new roofs, new windows, boilers or chillers, maybe elevators if they're mid or high rise. So what's going to happen with prices? That was your original question.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're, I think, you know, rents have, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, rents have been going up kind of at a record pace, but, you know, we over the past few years, we've been seeing a 3 to 5 in some instances percent increase in rents. And I think that they will likely continue at a 3% rate. So if you factor on an increase of 3% on your rents and 2.5 on your expenses, well, you know, you're going to continue to see an upward trend in your prices.
Yeah.
Because there's so much capital out there. I mean, like I said, we had 20 offers on some C-class assets here in town, and I was astounded. I was amazed.
Yeah, well, I guess I should stop talking about Cincinnati.
But so, I mean, that's the trend. We had we had a deal in Columbus with the same, nearly the same amount.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and the deal that I was talking to you about prior to, you know, hitting the record button, I think that had right around 30 offers on it. And so it just...
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Let's a couple last things and then we'll wrap up, or one last thing and then we'll wrap up. What are three key factors to your success and your brokerage's success?
I'll start with Capstone Apartment Partners, because they've, the leadership of our firm has made a very conscious effort to not just take every listing, but to get out there and do our best to build relationships. And it's paid off. I got a call last night from an institutional owner, and he's like, you know, usually I don't return these types of calls, because I hadn't met with him, but he's like, I have a great relationship with your Carolinas team. I know you wouldn't be wasting my time. And so, you know, here's an opportunity for you. And that was, I was like, yeah, this is the right place to be. So first thing I think is, being conscious of, I guess, your reputation and how you're being perceived out there in the market. Cause even if you don't care, what other people think of you, others do, and they will act accordingly. And then, so the second thing is, I just work really hard and try and work as smart as possible. And, you know, you want to surround yourself with great people as well. We've got a great marketing team who does a great job. Our analyst staff are tremendous, and my co-brokers that I work with daily are also really good. And, you know, we all have something that we can learn from each other every day. So, number three, I don't know, I kind of wrapped them all in together, but maybe the third is just, you know your market, that you're, you know, if you're looking at it from an investor point of view, you want to know every deal that's out there, whether you're going to be able to acquire it or not, for whatever reason. Maybe it's too big for you, maybe it's too small. I mean, if it's too small, then you don't necessarily need to know it, but you probably need to be conscious of it. And then, you know, make sure you have a firm grasp on financial markets and how the different lending products that are available may or may not shape what you're trying to do.
Cool. What's your favorite book?
The first one that came to mind is Think and Grow Rich, which I haven't read or listened to in a while, but I do love that one. It's a good one.
Awesome. So, Stash, I appreciate you being on the show and taking time. How do our listeners get in touch with you if they want to find out more?
Great question. Our website is capstoneapts.com. My email address is stash, STASH, at capstoneapts.com. And my cell phone number is 513-417-5588.
Awesome. Again, I appreciate you being on the show, taking time out of your day to talk to us. And you have a fantastic rest of the day.
Thanks, Todd. You too. Awesome. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, I appreciate Stash joining us on the show and taking time out of his day. It's always fun to hear from a successful real estate broker on, you know, how do you really communicate with brokers? Because I think a lot of us struggle, especially in a market that's hot like it is right now. Deals are hard to find. Good deals, I should say, are hard to find. You can find deals. Anybody will sell you their property, but do the numbers truly work? And so building a relationship with brokers are really important, and understanding how to do that is also important. And I struggle just like everyone else sometimes with doing it the exact right way, or, and there really is no exact right way, but we want to do a few things, and a few things I took from Stash is establish your reputation. You know, make sure you add value to that broker. Try to do what you can to add value to them. And then also try to have knowledge of the market and the properties and the capital markets and all that kind of stuff. So make sure you understand what you're doing. When you do establish a relationship, you don't want to just be the person that's always asking the questions and always taking. You want to be able to provide some value, and the more you can do that, the better. And also with building relationships, you know, be consistent, you know, be cautious about your reputation, you talked about. And then also, you know, let's say they send you a deal. They want to hear a no from you versus a maybe. And he said a quick no is better than a slow, you know, no or just a maybe, and then maybe never hearing from you again. So make sure you're you know, being conscious about how you're acting around that broker. The other thing that I thought was valuable that he said is, you know, surround yourself with great people. And that's how he's built a good brokerage and a good reputation. He has his partners with Capstone. He has Capstone themselves and surrounded himself with great people. And the last thing is know your market. And this talks to brokers and, of course, investors as well. Is know your market. And really anybody that's in business, know your market and understand it. And then understand the markets that affect it as well. So again, I appreciate Stash for joining us, taking time out of his day, tons of value that he was able to give us. So, reach out to him, Stash at CapstoneApartments.com, CapstoneApts.com. So STASH, and we'll put that in the show notes as well. If you enjoy this podcast, if you enjoy listening, you know, share it out with your friends, network, you know, put it on Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever you can do and share it out. Let other people know you're listening. And then give us a rating review on iTunes. We also want to hear your feedback. So become connected with us on Facebook at our Pillars of Wealth Facebook page. And just make comments. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what you want to hear about. We want to make sure we're serving you as best we can. So let us know what we can do to improve on Facebook, and we'll do our best. So appreciate everybody listening to the show, and make every day Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.